Let's have the committee, Judiciary Committee, come to order. It is just before 2 o'clock on Monday, March 8th, 2010. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Egan is here, Senator Coghill is here, myself, Senator French. We have five bills on the docket today, so I'm eager to get started. And the first one we're going to take up is a bill we heard last week, a fairly straightforward bill, SB 209, dealing with the State Council on the Arts and giving them the authority to promulgate regulations as necessary under the APA. We heard the bill, took public testimony on it, closed public testimony. I let it sit in the committee for a couple of days just so everyone could get comfortable with it. I believe the committee is. I would solicit a motion. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 209 and with committee recommendations.
And is there a fiscal note attached? Zero fiscal with note?
Yes.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved. We'll take a short at ease while we sign the bill and file. We are back on the record, and the next item on the agenda today is SB 260, a bill giving the authority to telephone and electric co-ops to allow members to vote by electronic transmission. We heard the bill, took public testimony, and in response to some questions that Senator Wilikowski raised, I have prepared an amendment that would, in essence, make certain that co-ops, if they do move to electronic voting, don't offer electronic voting only. That is, that there must be some other method of voting allowed so that the individuals who do not have computers can participate in the voting conducted by the co-op. So I will label that amendment number one. Members should have it on your desks. I will move amendment number one and ask if there's any objection. Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is adopted. And that brings the bill back before us as amended. And is there further committee discussion? Is there a motion? Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chair, regarding SB 260, I move that we move that bill out of committee as amended, along with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, SB 260 is moved out, and we will take another short at ease while we do the bill file. We will go back on the record, and next up on the agenda is SB 214 and HB 6. I understand that the prime sponsors of both of those pieces of legislation have been in touch with one another, and in conjunction with those talks, there has been prepared a CS that members should have on your desk. It's Senate CS for House Bill number 6. The backslash is S Sierra, and I would turn to Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Lynn. My office and his office have worked very closely on this. along with Representative Gatto over on the House side as well. And we basically combined the two bills together, and I think this is a very appropriate way to deal with these two bills. If you would like, I can have either my staff or Representative Lynn's staff come forward and explain to the committee or answer any questions that may be offered.
Let's take a short moment to welcome Senator McGuire to the committee, and we will turn now to Representative Lynn or your staffs. Why don't we have both offices come forward so we can have just a moment while everybody agrees that this is the...
Would you like a motion to adopt the CS, Mr.
President? Let's do that first. Go ahead.
I would move that we adopt CS version /S.
Is there objection to adoption of the CS?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
Only if it requires that we object to get the full information, but if not, I have...
Keep your objection on the table. We'll turn now to a explanation for what the CS does. Ms. Morgan, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Shelley Morgan, staff to Senator Wilikowski. In the CS for House Bill 6, the bill has been amended to include the language from both from Senate Bill 214 and its companion House Bill 138. Both bills include language pertaining to acts of animal cruelty, and both bills amend the same statute. Combined, these bills strengthen the punishment for animal cruelty while ensuring that violent acts of bestiality are punishable by law. Also in front of the committee is an amendment which relates to aggravating factors at sentencing involving assaultive behavior and cruelty to animals. This amendment will provide one more tool to help ensure that repeat offenders of violent crimes will be less able to plea down their punishment by making violent crimes against both people and animals aggravating factors at sentencing.
Let's hold off just for a second on the amendment, if you would, Ms. Morgan. Let me just turn to Mr. Sika. Are you in agreement with the representations that have been made with respect to the conjoining of the two bills?
My name is Mike Sika. I'm staff for Representative Bob Lynn, and Representative Lynn supports this.
Thank you, Mr. Sika. Further discussion of the CS? Don't hear or see any. Senator Coghill, questions?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I was in the other body when I heard the first part of this, but I suppose my second questions are going to be more related to the newer Senate version that was put into this. So.
Let's do them now. I mean, if they're right. In the CS, let's go ahead.
So, all I need to know is the language under Section 3. If I could just get a better explanation of that, I read some of the backup to that, but there are several parts to this that under the A 1, 3, and 4, and A 2, 5, 6, and 7, I have not had an opportunity to spend. If I could just get a brief explanation. I don't have to have an in-depth, but just a brief explanation.
Sure. Who should we turn to? Ms. Morgan, you want to take that?
Sure.
Thanks.
Most of the language, with the exception of Provisions 6 and 7 that you're referring to, are all out of Senate Bill 214, which creates a felony animal cruelty provision for knowingly inflicting severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal, and for killing or injuring an animal by the use of a decompression chamber or poison. In comparison with humans, the penalties for a serious injury of a person is typically a Class A or Class B felony, and the penalties for poisoning a person to death is an unclassified felony. As far as the misdemeanor provisions in the bill, Senate Bill 214 also creates a Class A misdemeanor for first offense and Class C felony, and for second offense within 10 years for failing to care for an animal with criminal negligence resulting in death, severe pain, or suffering, and knowingly killing or injuring an animal with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person. As all of those pieces have been merged now into this CS version of House Bill 6, with the added provision creating a Class A misdemeanor for the first offense and Class C felony for the second offense within 10 years for knowingly engaging in sexual conduct with an animal. In comparison with the misdemeanor provisions in this bill, the provisions for humans, negligent child endangerment would be a Class C felony. Stalking is a Class A misdemeanor on the first offense and a Class C felony on the second offense. And there's a varying arrays of sexual abuse of a minor, looking at minors being more similar as far as unable to protect themselves as an animal would be. Sexual abuse of a minor in the fourth degree is a Class A misdemeanor. In the third degree, it's a Class C felony. And if you go up to a first degree offense, it would be an unclassified felony. In nearly all of these provisions, the penalties for crimes inflicted upon humans are much greater than the penalties for crimes inflicted on animals. The penalties for stalking, however, is the same as that for knowingly killing or injuring an animal with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person, because this provision of animal cruelty is essentially one component of stalking or terrorizing another person.
And maybe I can just for the record, just so we're crystal clear, going back, the way I read this is that, and we have the, in Section 1, we have all the different sort of forms of animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. And it looks to me like A1, A3, A4 is automatically a C felony on the first offense. And then A2, A5, A6, A7 is a misdemeanor unless you've been convicted once before in the last 10 years previously. Everybody kind of in agreement?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks so much. Further questions, Senator Coghill?
Maybe, for instance, just to help me understand this, if fourth-degree assault, let's say somebody gets into a altercation and it's unprovoked, somebody gets a fourth-degree assault on a human being, where does this fall in equivalency here? Because I think a fourth-degree assault would fall into the misdemeanor unless there's some other aggravating factor. And I'm trying to get an idea where we sit, because you said it so fast that I didn't get that, and I'm sorry if I don't understand this. But
No, that's fine. A fourth-degree assault is to recklessly cause physical injury. It's just that simple. Physical injury is defined in the statutes basically as pain. So if you cause any amount of pain recklessly, that's a misdemeanor. Of course, that can widely range, but that's sort of the A misdemeanor assault statute.
Okay.
So any amount of pain qualifies as a misdemeanor.
All right. I'm trying to find the equivalency. She stated it, and I'm trying to get my feet on the ground on it. So mm-hmm. That's all I'm trying to do, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Mr. Sika.
And through the chair, I think if you look at the animal cruelty statutes, they're not talking about any amount of pain. They're talking about prolonged, and I'm sure a similar offense, maybe someone here could speak to that, a similar offense against a human being would be a much greater penalty.
Oh, absolutely. A1 looks like the only analog here, which is knowingly, which is a higher mental state, usually implying a more severe penalty, severe or prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal. You're definitely up in the higher felony range, C or B felony. Further questions? Let me ask if Senator Coghill, do you maintain your objection to adoption of the CS?
No, I mean, I think they do agree in concept. I just don't know that if I agree in total yet, but I think the concept of the two cruelty do fairly well travel together. It's just that, Mr. Chairman, my only thinking is, and I'm sorry for coming so late into this, but my only thinking is that we could end up having felonious behavior on animals where humans do bad things to each other, either property-wise or otherwise, and get pled out where this may not. And so I'm concerned that we end up with that dynamic, because you'll see these probably less before district attorneys and judges than you will the others. And so I'm trying to find that equivalency.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah. Well, and I'll just this issue has come up, and we've spoken about it many times. Just talked about it at the last hearing as well. If you knowingly inflict severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal, we're making that the lowest form of felony possible. If you do that to a human being, you're looking at a Class A felony, possibly. I guess there are situations where it could be an unclassified felony. much more stringent penalties. If you kill or injure an animal by use of decompression chamber, that is a Class C felony under this, the lowest form of felony. If you do that to a human, that would be an unclassified felony. If you intentionally kill or injure a pet or livestock using poison, that's a Class C felony under this bill. You do that to a human, that's an unclassified felony. 99 years in jail.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just ask the Senator a question. What is so significant about the decompression chamber? Is that something that is used often? I'm sorry, I don't know.
It's old language. I mean, I think this language has been in the statute for decades, is my understanding. It's been in for a long time. And I think it's just a particularly heinous way to kill animals. I think that's a method that has been used in the past to kill maybe at animal shelters and things like that. It's a really horrific way to kill an animal, and so that's just leftover language. And so is AS 1161-140A4, killing by the use of poison. That's language that has been in the statute for a long time.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Back to the CS.
I'll remove my objection.
So without objection, the CS is adopted, and we have an amendment.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. And this is an amendment that was added on the House side, and it was added in the House Judiciary Committee. It was adopted, and I just to keep the bills in parity between the House and Senate, I would move that amendment.
Amendment number one has been moved by Senator Wilkowski. Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is adopted. I guess the amendment makes a lot of sense to me. We've seen over and over and over we've heard from the Department of Law over and over and over that inflicting pain and suffering on animals is a highly accurate predictor of individuals who will be assaulted towards human beings. And so I think putting this in the sentencing statutes is appropriate. Comments from the bill sponsor, from the staff? Mr. Sika, anything? Representative Lynn, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing this bill again. And I agree with the CS. I think it's really a very good example of the House and Senate working together to craft legislation that protects both animals and humans. I think both bills were good individually. I think putting them together makes it, it's like 2 + 2 = 5. So I support it.
And I just want to say I'm particularly thankful to you, Representative Lynn. I thought it was a generous act on your part to open up your bill to other amendments. It was completely up to you. You know, your bill is obviously in a good position. This is not a legislative session where I think a lot of bills are going to pass. But I just want to thank you for working so well with other members of the committee.
Well, my main concern, Mr. Chair, is to protect the community, to stop this horrific abuses of animals, and it's a stair step to crimes against human, and we want to do that. So this is for the good of the people of Alaska.
Yeah. I just want to associate myself with your comments, Senator French, and in a 90-day session, it is challenging to get bills through both committee, both houses, and so I just want to thank you and commend you for your leadership in this area.
Glad it was possible.
So we have House Bill number 6 as amended before us. Is there further committee discussion? Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I think that cruelty to animals and the way people can treat even other people sometimes can be so egregious. My only concern and caution would be that it gets misused. For example, there are many things that we will ask our soldiers to do that could look as cruel and unusual, and yet there's a real purpose to it. And there are many things that we might ask animals to do, for example, with the police, that may very well end up becoming a question, and it may cause them prolonged pain, for example. And those things that we call upon other animals to do for us that human beings, we have a will. We can say yes, no, we don't like it or not. But we do have some animals that we train to do very specific things and have been a huge benefit to society. I would hate to see us fall into the place where that would be called into question. And so I tried to look at it from that perspective as well, but I couldn't find anything in there that just made me stop dead in my tracks. But I just, as a cautionary note, I'm not going to try to hold the bill up at all. But I hope that this does catch those who practice some very cruel behavior, and it's not used for those who enlist animals in the support of some very noble things.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Further committee discussion. Is there a motion? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that we move CS for House Bill number 6 out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved. And just before we do that, let's take a short at ease. Go back on the record, and as the bill leaves committee, we will note that there is a Senate concurrent resolution that will be necessary because of a title change, given the changes to the bill in this body. So with that, the bill is moved, and we'll take a short at ease while we do the paperwork.
Thank you, Mr.
And we are back on the record. The Judiciary Committee is back on the record. And next up is Senate Bill 202 by Senator Davis. Welcome, Senator Davis. Nice to have you here. And please come forward and bring whoever you'd like with you, if you'd care. And Senate Bill 202 is your bill. We will turn it over to you and let you make whatever opening statement you'd like to make.
All right. Thank you so much. To the chairman and the members of this committee, thank you for hearing this bill in such a timely manner. For those of you that's been in the legislature for a while, you know this bill has been around for a while. I'm not the first one to introduce it, but I hope I'll be the last one that have to introduce it. It was sent out many times by Senator Lincoln when she was on the House side and the Senate side, and I picked that ball up and have brought this bill before you again. I know there's a way for us to work out a situation to deal with hate crimes. I don't know what the right procedures would be, but I think the bill that we have before you this time is better than some of the ones that we bought before. And I would like for you to take the time to consider it and see what we can do to move it out of this committee on to the next committee of referral. And once again, thank you so much for hearing the bill. And I do have my aide, Tom Overmeyer, who will give an overview of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Mr. Overmeyer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Tom Overmeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you, Senate Bill 202, is an act relating to the commission of a crime when the defendant directed the conduct constituting the crime at the victim based on the victim's race, sex, color, creed, physical or mental disability, sexual orientation, ancestry, or national origin. Senate Bill 202 makes any crime against a person a more serious or aggravated crime if it is motivated by race, sex, color, creed, physical or mental disability, sexual orientation, ancestry, or national origin. Such crimes are referred to as hate crimes. Hate crimes are inchoate offenses, which are crimes of preparing for or seeking to commit another crime. absent a specific law, an inchoate offense requires that the defendant have the specific intent to commit the underlying crime. For example, for a defendant to be guilty of the crime of assault in the third degree in Alaska, the defendant must knowingly place another person in fear of imminent physical injury or intentionally or recklessly cause injury to another person by means of a dangerous instrument. Now, if this crime was motivated by hatred, bias, or prejudice under Senate Bill 202, it merges into a more serious hate crime and is punished at a higher level than normally would be accorded the underlying offense. So in essence, you have a new crime, a new hate crime, if it's by motivation. Without creating a new list of hate crimes, though, under AS 1176, Section 1176-150 simply reclassifies the level of any crime up one notch if motivated by prejudice, bias, or hatred. For example, a Class B misdemeanor becomes a Class A misdemeanor becomes a C felony, and so forth. Such reclassification, of course, increases the penalties appropriate to the classification in sentencing under AS 1255. The need for Senate Bill 202 is demonstrated by increasing reports of violence against homeless persons, minorities, religious groups, and others motivated by prejudice, bias, or hatred in Alaska and across the country in our highly diverse and multicultural society. When crimes are committed because of people's differences, the effects reverberate beyond a single victim or group into an entire community, city, state, and society as a whole. While SB 202 alone cannot eliminate prejudice, bias, or hatred, it will send a message that Alaskans will not tolerate hate crimes in any form, the consequences and punishment of which are very severe. I will point out that the bill before you is fairly brief. It's very targeted toward just ratcheting up the punishment. There, I think you probably have had some commentary from the ACLU as to the drafting of it, and they are here to address that. We also have our drafter, Jerry Luckhoff, available to answer any questions regarding the reason for keeping the words the way they are, and maybe to explain his position as to the ACLU's concerns regarding rights of association, gender identity, and mandatory minimum sentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. Let me just ask one sort of general question. That is this legislation modeled after any other one that you're aware of? Is it modeled after federal legislation, or has another state taken this approach? I'm just curious, you know, sort of where we fall in the general hate crime approach.
Mr. Chairman, this bill does not really follow the Matthew Shepard bill that was passed in the federal level. That was passed last year. It did use slightly different language, including, I believe, gender identity. And I think that may be one of the impetuses for the ACLU picking up on looking very carefully at the language that we have. The language we have, with these specific words, sex, color, creed, and so forth, are in the Alaska Constitution and drafted throughout the statutes. And I think there was some concern that to change the language in this bill might cause enormous other changes throughout our statutory authority.
Senator Wilikowski, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just give me a refresher on if we have this in federal law, if someone commits this crime and we have it in state law, and I'm just kind of blanking at this moment, could they be prosecuted under both federal and state? I mean, give me a little refresher on that if you could, or if someone could.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'm not an expert on that. I think we have people in the room that could answer that question, and perhaps even Senator French himself. But it's been my experience in dealing with the state law that often we can go beyond what the federal mandates require, either in whether it's in sentencing or it's in health care or some other area. But we can't do less than what the federal law does. So that's about where I am on this.
I think the short answer is, and we may get Ms. Carpentier up here, but I think the short answer is it's not double jeopardy if you're prosecuted by the feds or by the state, even for the same act. We do have Ms. Carpentier here to answer questions. We've got some folks signed up to testify. Any other questions for the bill sponsor or staff? Don't hear or see any. Thank you so much. Why don't we take some public testimony? Let's turn to J. Kate Burkhart. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation. If any, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Kate Burkhart. I am the executive director of the Alaska Mental Health Board. And I preface my comments before committees by explaining, as most of you are aware, the Alaska Mental Health Board is established by statute to serve in an advisory and advocacy role for Alaskans that are affected by mental illness or their families or communities. We do not represent the position of the Department of Health or Social Health and Social Services or the governor. This is the position of the board members. So I always preface that by I speak only for my board members. And today I am here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 202, specifically with the provisions that protect people with physical and mental disabilities. I am not speaking regarding any other population today. And the reason that the Alaska Mental Health Board supports this bill and the intent behind it is because while there is not a great deal of research about the level of victimization of people with serious mental illness, what research we do have shows that they are at a monumental risk of victimization, whether it is violent crime upon their person or their property. Study from 2005 from Northwestern University found that people with serious mental illness are 11 times more likely than people without mental illness to be the victims of violent crime. And while this bill targets those crimes that are committed because of the victim's disability, and we recognize would not address all crimes inflicted on people with disabilities, it does go a long way to helping protect the most vulnerable members of our communities in Alaska. We think that this bill does further some of the goals that have been called for by the National Council on Disability, the National Center for Victims of Crime, and the Association of University Centers on Disability, who in 2007 came together to call for increased public education and policy changes to prevent the victimization of people with disabilities, whether physical or mental. And as the sponsor and her staff spoke, this bill does provide the educational component of sending the message that crimes committed against people simply because of their disability are unacceptable, and it's a policy change because it heightens the penalties for those sorts of crimes. So with that, I just want to express the Mental Health Board's appreciation for the sponsor's work and the committee's willingness to consider this bill. Thank you.
Ms. Burkhart, thank you. Next up is Marsha Buck. Marsha Buck? Welcome. Make yourself comfortable.
I will do that.
Put yourself on the record. State your affiliation, if any. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
And I'll clear my throat first. My name is Marsha Buck, and I'm a resident here of Juneau. I'm tested. I'll have to
water?
Do this
off. Some water?
I might or I'll. I'm testifying today representing the Board of Directors of Alaskans Together for Equality, Incorporated. And that group is Alaska's statewide advocacy organization, thank you, formed to advance civil equality for Alaska's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered citizens. I serve on the board of Alaskans Together for Equality because my daughter, my oldest daughter, is in a lifelong relationship with another woman, and there are two grandchildren out of that relationship. So I'm a proud grandmother and a proud mother, and I serve on the Alaskans Together board because of those relationships. And I'm testifying today because I care deeply about the personal safety of my daughter-in-law, and my grandchildren. Alaskans Together for Equality would like to thank you for having this bill up for hearing, and we thank Senator Davis for proposing it at this time. We support the bill in its coverage of crimes motivated by prejudice and bias and hatred based on several inherent characteristics, the characteristics with which people are born, like sexual orientation. We recognize that hate crimes are not limited to our gay and lesbian family members or our neighbors, but that they occur throughout the minority community, and that this bill emphasizes that Alaska has no tolerance for such acts. Our support for this bill, however, comes with the condition of an amendment. We firmly request that paragraph A of 11.76.150 be amended to include gender identity and expression. As I'm certain you are aware, some people in our society perceive others as different, as too masculine or too feminine, and that perception may evoke a violent emotional response leading to harm. It does not matter if the person is the person perceived as different is heterosexual, that is straight, or if they're gay, to be a recipient of that response. We strongly contend that many Alaskans are in jeopardy of gender expression hate crimes, particularly our youth, who are often subject to bullying based on expression that's different from the fluctuating norm. The term gender identity also includes Alaskans who are transgender. I was horrified to learn very recently about a transgender woman whose nose was broken during an assault while she was traveling on the People Mover bus in Anchorage, an assault that occurred because she was transgender. We ask you, representing the Alaska Legislature, to stand up firmly and amend this bill to make it clear that you have no tolerance for such acts. In closing, Alaskans Together for Equality would ask that you pass SB 202 out of committee with an amendment that adds gender identity to paragraph A of 11.76.150. And we thank you for your attention.
Ms. Buck, thank you so much for coming down and testifying. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Very good. We'll give it to the, and we'll make sure everybody gets that. Next up is Kelly Birkinshaw. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, if any. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kelly Birkinshaw, and I am also here on behalf of Alaskans Together for Equality, and also on behalf of myself. Alaskans Together for Equality supports this legislation designed to protect civil rights of an individual who may be targeted for violence or harassment based on who they inherently are, for example, because of their race or because of their gender identity or because of their sexual orientation, or based on their ideas in alignment with or their membership of a group which they may belong. We recognize that hate crimes are not limited to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, and we appreciate that this bill emphasizes that Alaska has no tolerance for such acts. However, as it is currently drafted, and as Marcia described, SB 202 leaves out transgender individuals, and it is essential that gender identity be included in this bill. If you need some definitions, I'd be happy to define some of these things right now. If not, I can skip that and move to my personal testimony, but sometimes...
Senator McGuire.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. No, I think that would be helpful because I can kind of envision where the committee conversation may go. If it is gender identity, we want to know what that, you know, how that would be defined. When you get into the area of expression, how that gets defined sometimes might be more nebulous. So I would like to hear the...
Sure. I will do the best that I can. Sexual orientation and gender identity are often confused. The two are independent variables in an individual's definition of himself or herself. Sexual orientation is a personal and unique way that a person perceives his or her own sexual desires and expression towards others, and ranges from one of the opposite biological sex, and biological sex being the distinction between a male and a female, and runs along a continuum, could be anywhere between there, to the same biological sex as themselves. Gender is the concept of maleness and femaleness, or masculinity and femininity. One's gender identity is a sense of oneself as a male or a female or anywhere along that continuum, and sometimes falling outside of that continuum. Sex refers to the biological characteristics a person has at birth, So a transgender person is a person who identifies their gender as possibly different than the sex that was assigned to them at birth. So they are related in some ways, but they are very separate. So speaking for myself, as a resident of Juneau and also as a lesbian, I am happy that this bill would protect me in that respect. However, probably the deepest and most painful wounds that I have are based on
it's okay.
My gender perception, being perceived as too masculine as a child. I was bullied, I was pushed around, and I was made not to feel welcome. Thankfully, as we grow older, we get more curves on our bodies, and I've lost my boyish figure. But those wounds stay with us for a long time. Gender identity is very important, and I'm very saddened to know that close to 40%, or estimates up to 60%, of my transgender brothers and sisters in community have experienced violent reactions. I know what that feels like, and I would strongly urge you to include gender identity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Birkinshaw. And we will take that under consideration. Thank you. Next up is Jeff Jesse. Mr. Jesse, please come forward. You're familiar with the committee process. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And as you might expect, my testimony is focused on the part of this bill that would address hate crimes based upon physical or mental disability. Many of our beneficiaries are singled out for physical attacks, whether they're homeless, whether they're trying to just be out in the public. May have behaviors that other people identify as different, and they can be set upon and in some cases very severely injured or even killed. You heard some personal testimony just a second ago about how these types of crimes are so damaging to people. You know, I was born with a cleft palate. I couldn't order a meal in a restaurant until I was 11 years old. And throughout my education in elementary school, I was bullied, I was beat up, I was told that I was not a part of that community, I was mocked. And those are very, very painful experiences. And the same kids that beat me up and mocked me are the same people that grow up into adults that commit these kinds of crimes. And I know, you know, maybe it's not always a good idea to criminalize everything, but there are some times when I think society does have to stand up and say, you know, it's bad enough that you're hurting people, but if you're going to hurt them based upon their differences, then there is going to be an additional penalty for that. And both personally and on behalf of the trust, I urge you to pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jesse. Appreciate you coming forward. We have David Eastman, who wants to testify. Mr. Eastman, are you here in the room or online? Mr. Eastman, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I am online.
Please go ahead and identify yourself and your affiliation, if any, and the committee will be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is David Eastman, and I have served as a military police officer here in Alaska for 6 years. Based on my experience in law enforcement, I would like to speak against this legislation. And I do not believe that any amendment will successfully rescue this bill. This legislation would actually shift the focus from the abuse suffered by the victim and the abuse intended by the offender to the mindset of the offender as though society itself were harmed by the motives of the offender. the effects, as I see it, of this are twofold. The abuse of the victim, which is the only true crime, ends up being minimized, and the focus placed in other areas. The plain and simple truth is that crime is inherently discriminatory. I discriminate when I choose you out of a crowd and decide to pick your pocket, or steal your car, or break into your house, or steal your identity. If I choose to commit a crime against you because of your age, I have simply committed the crime. But if I choose to commit a crime against you because you are a man, then I have committed the crime of motivation. If I target you because of your size, or your obesity, or your status as a member of the military, I simply commit a crime. But if it's because you are a descendant of an infamous person like Hitler, again, I have committed the crime of motivation. Let's face it, in any of these cases, my motives are bad, regardless. Do we need the government to step in and tell me that they're bad? Do we need the government to step in and tell me how I should love others and not hate them? That seems to me more a role for a church than a police officer and a judge. The real problem itself is, of course, the hate. Now, government is not particularly effective at changing hearts through legislating morality. And yet, I understand it can be very tempting to do so. I would urge you, please do not succumb to that temptation. With this legislation, we move away from equality under the law. That equality is absolutely a bedrock of American values. We recite, for example, the Pledge of Allegiance, Liberty and Justice for All. And while we talk about equality, this bill would inevitably make some of us more equal than others. No longer are our rights as Alaskans given the respect and protection that they deserve. Now our rights as a member of some category or designation or group are elevated, contrasted to our rights as Alaskans. This further politicizes another aspect of our lives, and I, for one, believe that we desperately need to be moving in the opposite direction today. Let's step outside of the politicized mindset for a moment and be honest. Crimes are motivated by hate. Disregard for the other person, a willingness to violate their rights as human beings and as fellow citizens. When I commit a violent assault against another person, that crime is motivated by hate, by my refusal to treat another person with respect and the dignity that they deserve. Is one of my victims more worthy of respect and dignity because she happens to be a member of my race or not a member of my race? Putting someone away for 5 years isn't going to make them a more loving person when they get out of prison. If anything, statistics tell us the opposite is more likely to happen. Subject to your questions, that completes my testimony. Thank you very much.
Mr. Eastman, thank you.
Mr. Eastman, thank you.
Next up is Quinlan Steiner. Mr. Steiner, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Hi, this is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. And I just had a couple of comments on the bill, and would be welcome to some questions. Both of them just relate to some practical issues with respect to the way that it's drafted and its ultimate effect. The first one is the use of the word knowingly directed. I think as a theoretical matter that use of the word knowingly is inconsistent with sort of the mens rea scheme. I mean, you can't sort of knowingly have a motive, you know, and criminalize that. It's really more along the lines of specific intent, although it's hard to distinguish because they're sort of different concepts. But the knowing aspect of the conduct would be, you know, the crime itself. Motive is more in line with specific intent. So by using the word knowingly there, you'd be sort of confusing the issues and attempting to think downgrade, or it could be confused as downgrading something you can't theoretically downgrade to a lower mens rea. So that's my one sort of practical drafting concern. A second concern that I have with the bill is also somewhat practical with regard to proof. Typically, motive is not a crime. We criminalize acts. by criminalizing motive, you're broadening the proof of a criminal case to beyond the act, but actually to the person themselves. And that creates a significant problem in terms of conducting the trial, just the broad range of evidence that would be coming in, especially if you're elevating that crime. And you really essentially be putting that person's comments and speech and other things that they've done throughout their life on trial as a way of proving a specific act. You know, because it could go beyond the act itself and comments that were made during the act. I think this is best sort of illustrated by fear assault and disorderly conduct. You could actually use epithets during the conduct of committing the act that would then, you know, open up your entire life and anything you've said as to evidence of whether or not you've acted with a particular motive. You know, it's that proof that relates back to specific intent. So the two working together really create a much broader trial, one where the focus is not so narrow that we usually do in criminal cases. So those are my two concerns. I just wanted to put those on the record. And if you have any questions about those, I'm happy to answer them.
Mr. Steiner, thank you for testifying. We're running a little short of time. If you have any specific drafting suggestions, I'd be happy to receive them and to take them under advisement. So if you have language you think that makes the bill easier to implement, please send them along to me.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Senator Coghill.
For anybody who can answer this, and it doesn't have to be answered today, we have the aggravator in 155, I think, number 22, C22, on this particular issue. It'd be interesting to me to find out how often that has been applied. I understand it's only been in the statute 2 years, I think, but it would be interesting to see if there's been an application to date and how that has been handled, because I think the same questions would apply to some degree, even though it's not exactly the same language. But the motive then is, the personal motive is more in question than the act under that aggravator.
Ms. Carpinetti, do you want to answer that today or later?
For the number of cases, I'd rather have some time to answer.
Fantastic. That actually fits in with our schedule better. So we'll hold this bill over to a future hearing and get the answer to that soon, and we'll give you plenty of notice so that you know when we're going to ask you to produce an answer. And we do have Mr. Mittman here. I see he's joined us. I'm fairly certain he wants to testify about this bill. So we will have him come forward. Welcome to the committee. Nice to see you. Please put yourself on the record and give us 3 minutes on the bill.
Thank you. Senator, Mr. Chair, committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the executive director of the ACLU of Alaska. And I have submitted written testimony, and I'll just briefly comment on that. As we noted, we appreciate the sponsor's introduction of this bill. We think it's important that the state of Alaska go on record as stating that we value all of our citizens, that all citizens should be protected from targeted acts of hatred and violence. We think it's an important statement to make that there are evidence, statistics to support that individuals have been targeted and are targeted for issues of race, sex, religion, and in particular sexual orientation and gender identity issues. Because of that, we think it's important that the phrase gender identity be added to the bill. Individuals of variant gender are targeted for violence. They are murdered. They are beat up. They are attacked because they are different, and they frighten people. And it's important that they understand that they are protected. And by the same token, on the other side, we do have some concerns, and it sounded to me as if the public defender was raising them as well, which is there are protected associational and free speech rights that must be recognized. So, for example, if an individual were to attack a transgender person or a lesbian or gay person because they believe homosexuality is wrong, the act of the attack can be punished, but the person should not be prosecuted merely based on their association, their membership, or their past statements. So, for example, if you had an individual making a public statement they believed homosexuality was wrong and then went out and attacked and gay-bashed, that evidence should not be introduced because it does not directly relate to the crime. By the same token, a Ku Klux Klan member who attacks a Jewish person, membership in the Ku Klux Klan, while clearly this is a repugnant view, I don't think it's one any of us in this room would share, the Constitution of the United States, the Alaska Constitution, gives that person the right to hold those beliefs, and they should not be punished for them. Based on that, we've requested that information language be added to the bill that specifically states that at trial, evidence should be introduced if it directly relates to the crime, but not merely as associational or First Amendment rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mittman. Senator Wilikowski has a question.
I think you just answered the question. Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Mittman? Hearing and seeing none, again, thanks for making time to come and give us your views on the bill. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify about SB 202? Anyone else in the room who would like to do so? Hearing and seeing none, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony, and we will hold the bill over for a future hearing and take up some of the ideas and the offerings we've had with respect to amendments. But thank you, Senator Davis, for bringing the bill forward. Let's turn now, while we've got a few minutes left of committee time, and get at least an introduction to Senate Bill 284, Campaign Expenditures. That bill is a Judiciary Committee bill, so I assume you all are intimately familiar with it. But just in case, we will go ahead and state some of the provisions of the bill so that the community and the folks that are watching and listening know what it is we're talking about. The bill, of course, is in response to a recent Supreme Court decision opening up what many of us believe are floodgates with respect to independent expenditures for and against candidates up until the day of an election. Alaska has had a complete ban on corporate spending in elections, and because of that ban, our statutes were largely silent with respect to what corporations, whether they report and how they disclose their expenditures. The meat of the bill is in two sections, Section 4 and Section 11. Section 4 deals with disclosure, writing down a piece of paper and submitting to APOC the expenditures you've made for and against a candidate. Section 11 deals with disclaimers, identifying the communication, the ad itself, and putting words in the ad that tell the public what it is or who it is that's supporting or pushing this piece of legislation. So that's a brief overview. Any questions for me about the general gist of the bill? Like I said, this bill is not going to obviously not going to move today, and so there'll be time. I want to take public testimony and then let committee members study it for a few days before we take any amendments. Senator Coghill.
Question: there were a couple of I like a lot of the things that were drafted in this bill, but there are some things that I would like to pull out and challenge by way of amendment. Is that the best thing to do, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Short answer: yes. We do have the drafter here, Mr. Bullard. I don't know if anybody has any questions for him. I don't see any, but thank you so much for being available, Mr. Bullard. And we have some folks signed up to testify. We also have, to answer questions, John Patasson from the Department of Law and Holly Hill from the Alaska Public Offices Commission. And we have two folks signed up to testify. Let's turn to them now. First off, Matt Wallace. Matt Wallace from Ackberg, are you on the line?
Yep, I am on the line.
Please state your name and affiliation, and the committee would be happy to hear your testimony.
Thanks. For the record, my name is Matt Wallace, Executive Director for the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or ACPIRG. And I just wanted to quickly, briefly weigh in support of Senate Bill 284 today. As was mentioned already, the bill's in response to a pretty catastrophic decision by the Supreme Court in January, known as Citizens United. Certainly that decision didn't invent the problem of big money influence in politics. You know, we all know that big money too often and unfortunately can buy access and influence in politics, and that in large part we believe explains a lot of the cynicism that many citizens feel towards politics in general. And unfortunately, the Citizens United decision did make the problem much, much worse by, again, opening the floodgates for independent expenditures in elections. And ultimately, there may need to be aggressive federal action to really solve more of the systemic problems that have led us to where we are vis-a-vis campaign finance and big money influence. But we certainly think that there's a lot that we can do at the state and federal level to mitigate the influence of the decision now. And Senate Bill 284 is just such a piece of much-needed legislation, in our view, that would help to mitigate unlimited corporate and union spending in our elections. And we're especially pleased by the piece of the bill that requires very significant disclaimers for independent expenditures in campaign ads. Where many people are familiar with the situation where you have a really negative attack ad in politics that's paid for by, you know, Citizens for Truth, Justice, and the American Way or some other such front group. And then the thing I think that's notable about this bill is, of course, that it would require that the top five contributors for those front groups also be disclosed. We think that's a really good thing. In addition, of course, to, you know, the very common sense and laudable reporting requirements that are included in the legislation as well. So I'll leave my testimony at that, and we'll go from there.
Mr. Wallace, thank you. Next up, we have Marilyn Russell in Fairbanks with the League of Women Voters. Ms. Russell, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation, and the committee would be happy to hear your testimony.
All right. Thank you. I am Marilyn Russell, and I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Alaska. The League supports Senate Bill 284 because our position on this subject is as follows. The League of Women Voters believes the goals of the campaign system should be, one, to ensure the public's right to know, two, to combat corruption and undue influence, thirdly, to enable candidates to compete more equitably for public office, and fourth, to promote citizen participation in the political process. The League of Women Voters filed a brief in support of the provisions in McCain-Feingold. It's also called the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which restricted corporate participation in elections, and was disappointed in the recent court's decision, as were many Americans. Polls show that 8 in 10 Americans oppose the decision to allow corporate political spending. Since this decision has been made, it is vital that Alaska's campaign laws be amended to require full disclosure of campaign contributions by corporations and labor unions, which are currently not covered under existing laws regarding disclosure and disclaimers. The League has long been on record supporting public disclosure of campaign contributions of money, goods, as well as services. Citizens should know who is spending money supporting or opposing candidates, as well as ballot issues. And this information should be available as part of the communication itself, like every other campaign communication, etc. A loophole of this magnitude in Alaska's reporting laws is simply unacceptable and must be amended before the upcoming primary election and, of course, before the general election. Thank you.
Ms. Russell, thank you so much for making time to testify this afternoon. Is there anyone else online who'd like to testify about SB 284? Anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? With that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony, and we will hold the bill over for a more extensive workup and markup on the bill when we have time to go through it more thoroughly. Let me just, before we end, remind the committee that on Wednesday we have the Attorney General in front of us for a confirmation hearing. If you can be on time, that would be helpful so we can get started and give him the full amount of time that we have. I have some questions to him today, and of course you're free to answer, ask any questions that come to mind when he's here, but I just wanted to give him at least some direction as to where I'd like him to go in his remarks to the committee. If there's nothing else to come before us this afternoon, we are adjourned.